Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Whether you're a fan of bourbon, scotch, tequila, rum, gin, whatever it is, VSLiquor.com has you covered. And here's the best part. Don't leave your home. VSLiquor.com is the most reliable alcohol delivery there is. Make sure to type in the code SPORTS when you check out, and you'll get 15% off your initial order. VSLiquor.com, proud partner of the Sliwa Show. All right, I want to welcome in Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic, who is now going to be covering the Los Angeles Rams. She's here to discuss how the Black Lives Matter video from NFL players forced Roger Goodell's hand. Great article right now on The Athletic. Jordan, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really grateful to be here and grateful to be covering the Rams.
All right. So you were just kind of give everybody a little bit of a background here. So you were covering the Carolina Panthers for the last 4 years. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And have you moved to LA yet?
No, I haven't. I'm still in Charlotte. I'm waiting for it to be safe for everybody to get out there and just really, really looking forward to finally moving out. And I'm from the West Coast originally, so I am extremely excited to be back in my preferred time zone.
All right. Good for you. That's great. Well, thank you for thanks for taking the time and doing this on the show. And obviously, we'll welcome you into LA. So once the NFL season starts, we'll look forward to chatting with you on everything Rams. You got a great article in The Athletic, and this past week, I think, has been very interesting. Past couple of weeks have been very interesting, but for the NFL, I'm seeing and I'm noticing that there are just an incredible amount of players who are feeling comfortable with speaking their mind, feeling comfortable with, talking obviously about the social injustice in this country and having plenty of platforms to do it. Have you heard from any players or maybe just the way they viewed Roger Goodell's video from last week condemning racism? So he comes out, and I think there's always a lot of questions around the NFL, and we'll date it back to Colin Kaepernick, and we'll do that in a little bit. But what is the kind of the how are players feeling about Goodell's video?
You know, I obviously can't speak for every player, but from the players I've heard from, a lot of it was, okay, this is a step. And what they mean by that is this is finally acknowledgement that they are being heard. It's finally acknowledgement that there will not be, as far as they know, punishment for peacefully protesting, for speaking to the platforms that they are passionate about, to recognizing, you know, what they care about, and also to making sure that they are valued. And so that to them was a step. Now it's about action. And, you know, I've heard from a couple of current and former players, and I know we'll get to them in a second, but they feel either an apology to Kaepernick is necessary to really prove that Goodell meant what he said, or signing him to a team is necessary, something that will really say, okay, we didn't just talk because we were very much pressured into this, but we also are backing it up with action to show that we are really taking this seriously and trying not to botch this time around.
What do you think the sentiment is in the league, like around the players, like I mentioned? Do most people think Goodell's video came out specifically because the video from the players? Is that the sentiment from some of the people that you spoke to?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, so it was a combination. So it was definitely external pressure from the players and their using their voices. And really, the high caliber, like superstar, majorly key to the NFL's branding players, Pat Mahomes, Odell, Tyrann Mathieu, Michael Thomas, Saquon Barkley, you know, guys who are really, the NFL literally depends upon in their branding efforts. Independently calling out Goodell was huge too, and that was a wake-up call. And also internal pressure from the league's Black employees who, in a series of town halls throughout the last 10 days, have been urging Commissioner Goodell to speak up in a stronger way, have been telling him how they feel, have been very candid, emotional. extremely blunt with him. And so that started out with conversations internally with their managers, and then still feeling like they weren't being heard, started to trickle all the way up to Goodell, and a series of very emotional town hall meetings led to that internal pressure as well as the external pressure. And with that pressure, as we know in football, if you've got pressure coming up the middle and around the outside, the quarterback's got nowhere to go. So to me, that's very much the sentiment. So that's why players in my interactions with some, and again, I can't speak for all of players across the league, but there needs to be action now, actual substantial action items that they need to start taking care of.
Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic joining the Sliwa Show. Do they lay out specifically, what do you think is that action they're referring to? Because, you know, I think right now the NFL, they've had this problem, and it was a political issue a few years ago, and mm-hmm. it kind of falls along the same lines now as a political issue, as in some have viewed what Colin Kaepernick has done in the past as, oh, well, that's disrespecting the flag. I mean, look, it was just a few days ago, Drew Brees, one of the more popular players in the NFL, still kind of had that similar stance. Now, his tone has changed a little bit, but what do you think is some of the action that players are looking for that would make them feel like, hey, we are moving in the right direction, and this is a direction we need to go in?
Yeah, well, I think you honestly touched on it just a small bit in your question, because what happened so many years ago, 2016, 2017, what happened was the league allowed it to be skewed into a political issue. What Colin Kaepernick was protesting was systemic oppression, racism, and police brutality. But the league allowed themselves to kind of be pushed around, by people in Congress, by external voices, and allowed it to become a political issue. And so this time around, what really I think players are looking for is to not let sort of the larger voices in this country skew it again into a political issue that the league will bend to. I think they're also looking for support from the owners of the franchises. And I also do think they're looking for tangible action, investing in grassroots organizations within their own communities that they believe in, that they know are out there doing the work, feeling okay that they will not get punished for speaking up and speaking out, maybe even against, the league itself, as we saw in that video. Things like that, I think are what are kind of referred to as action items that I'm hearing would be places to start.
Jordan, you did a great job of, in your article, breaking down how this video from the players came about. And the video, for those who haven't got a chance to see it, I'm sure everybody saw it, but Michael Thomas is on there, Tyrann Mathieu, Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham Jr., Patrick Mahomes in there. There's a number of players, big-time players, that are part of this fantastic message, not just to the NFL, but the message is obviously to everyone out there. And with all their platforms combined, I'm sure it got an incredible amount of views. Can you explain to listeners who haven't got a chance to read the article of how that video came about? What's kind of the backstory behind it?
Yeah, so it might be one of the coolest stories I've ever had a chance to write, just because I kept hearing people tell me how this happened, and I just kept going, what? Like, what? And so basically, like I said, these meetings, and they were led by the Black Engagement Network, which is a network of Black employees within the league at the various league offices. These meetings were happening, and then there were also meetings happening within different groups of content creators, creatives, TV talent, like all of these different types of town halls were happening over the last 10 days. And they were escalating in terms of the candid nature of them, people sharing their own experiences, and really calling for action after that sort of flimsy statement was put out initially by the league. And so one employee, his name's Brendan Minter, and he works in the LA office, and he was really frustrated because there was all of this conversation about doing something, and it just felt like the league was not listening. It felt like the senior staff and Goodell were not listening, especially to these very heartfelt personal experiences that his Black colleagues were sharing. And so he DM'd Michael Thomas on Instagram and asked him if he wanted to take a stand to create a video to kind of circumvent the league jurisdiction and create this video. And Michael Thomas acted as an executive producer, helping write the script and helping Brendan get in touch with all of these different players that you see in the video and giving them each lines. And then over the course of the next 12 hours or so, Minter, he edited it all together, and then the players started sharing it out on their own platforms. And so he was acting independently. As a league employee, he was acting independently from the league, and the players were acting independently from the league. And it was sort of this amazing phenomenon to see, because you have not seen that collectively occur. You saw what happened when one or two players spoke out, one or two players knelt. But you have not seen what could happen, you know, in this day and age with sort of a powerful statement such as this, as a group of these superstar players. That would also completely catch the league off guard. You know, Brendan did let a manager know, but at that point, the train was rolling. Like, there's no way this thing is stopping. And so now all of this pressure is on Goodell externally, and at the same time, he's hearing from all of these employees within the league itself. And so it just was incredible how they all sort of worked together to accomplish this.
Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic. She covers the Los Angeles Rams. And also here right now to discuss how the Black Lives Matter video from NFL players forced Roger Goodell's hand. You can read this article on The Athletic right now. You know, it's going to be, I think, one of the main questions in the NFL. And just as your own personal opinion, your own thoughts. But how do you think this plays out? And what I'm referring to is Colin Kaepernick. Do you think he gets – I feel like there's a lot of players that want to see him, you know, obviously get an opportunity again in the NFL, or at the minimum have the NFL address an apology to Colin Kaepernick, because there's no – I mean, it's very simple what happened. Colin Kaepernick, he's protesting something that meant something to him. He needed to raise awareness for it. You go back and listen to any of his YouTube videos or videos, you know, obviously from the media that now are up at YouTube. He had a very clear message of what he was trying to do, and his intention was not to, you know, obviously disrespect those in the military or disrespect the flag. And by the way, there are going to be people who don't care, and they also say, well, they also feel that way. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But the question I have for you is, do you feel like there – do you think we'll have that opportunity where a team comes out this upcoming season or sometime in the near future and says, you know what? We want to give Kaepernick a chance, not just because he did what he did and he got blackballed from the NFL for this long, but they feel like he has a legitimate chance to be a good quarterback in the NFL, a good backup quarterback in the NFL. He deserves it, and he's entitled to opportunity like everybody else.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously I feel that way, but I think that the window to sign him was after his workout, and I went and covered that workout in Atlanta. Obviously, I'm in Charlotte right now, so it was a quick drive down to cover that entire, day-long saga that was that workout, and that would have been the opportunity. He had a great workout and showed that he's in shape, and scouts were there, and they reported back, and now, at this point, I think the best-case scenario from the league would probably be an apology, but signing him is a complicated matter because you have, you know, all of these public relations experts, particularly along senior staff, and they're saying, okay, well, if we sign him now, then it looks like we're just doing it for a publicity stunt. It looks like we're just doing it because, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement is global, and people are in the streets protesting peacefully day and night across the globe, and it looks like we are sort of just doing a publicity stunt. Now, in terms of the actual signing of Colin Kaepernick as a quarterback in the National Football League, the window for him to be signed by the league in an organic way was that workout. And so now it seems like they should apologize to him, and players, it sounds like, would like that to be a bare minimum. But will it happen? It kind of would require so much pride to be swallowed on the part of the league, which we've never seen before. In terms of admitting where they went wrong, admitting mistakes, and so it's hard to imagine. But I will also say this, I really couldn't have imagined Roger Goodell releasing that video the other day, so I guess anything could happen at this point.
You know, Jordan, the reason why I feel like there's a greater likelihood that it can happen is because I think it would be more accepted than maybe, you know, when was that workout? How long ago was that workout now? That was
this past year. Yeah.
Okay. So it was, you know, whatever it was this past year, right? So the reason why I say it might be more acceptable in the sense that maybe there wouldn't have been enough pressure from, pressure is not even the right word. Like, I feel like for the first time, it would be accepted for an owner. And I'm talking about from an owner's perspective, right? From an owner's perspective, if they had some type of silent agreement, okay, let's nobody go after, you know, Colin Kaepernick, make sure he's not on anybody's team. Maybe they do that. Maybe they don't. But now if it happened, I think it would, you know, it'd be one of those stories. You're not trying to make it a PR thing. You're just trying to see, okay, this guy had talent. At one point in the NFL, I had Kirk Morrison on the show last week, and him and I were talking about this. And Kirk said, hey, I think this guy can still play. He's just 32 years old. We could name off 10 quarterbacks that are between the age of 31 and 40 plus in this league that are, you know, starters or backups, that he should have kind of one of those chances. It would be unfortunate that he doesn't get the chance because it's all being seen as a PR, you know, stunt, or they think that another team is looking at it from a PR perspective. But I think you said it best. Somebody's going to have to swallow their pride. I think that's part of the growth. And if the NFL wants to show part of the growth, it should be something that they embrace.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I'll tell you what, I saw him throw in person and the guy can still play. I'm telling you that right now.
Yeah, it is. You know, we saw some of that. That was a kind of a whole funky workout too. It's like they changed the date on him. A lot of scouts weren't available. So that's another story in itself. Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic joining the Sliwa Show. Jordan, I want to ask you, how do you think the NFL handles a similar situation this upcoming season? What if it comes up again? I mean, you know, now it seems like you're going to have much more of, you know, players that feel comfortable with saying, you know what, I am going to take a stance. And a lot of this started by Colin Kaepernick. What do you think they'll do to think about that? And I know there's other sports before that. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody in the NBA, when they start their league back in, you know, August, late July, that the NBA has to address something along those lines. But how do you think the NFL will handle it?
You know, I think it's different this time around for a lot of reasons. And one of them is, I think the NFL, by watching themselves be turned into and skewed into a political weapon, for lack of a better word, and for something that they knew that their players did not believe in terms of being turned into a political weapon, they don't want that to happen again. The NFL, in all of its billions and billions of dollars, and I'll say every one of these team owners, they want to be the ones that control their own narrative for their season. And so I don't think they will want to have that be skewed. So I would imagine that they'll fight a little harder on behalf of their players. And I would also say that you have a lot of head coaches now who are speaking up. Sean McVay here in Los Angeles included. Obviously Anthony Lynn here in Los Angeles was a very, very early coach to speak out. Dan Quinn was marching the other day in Atlanta. You know,
Pete Carroll's been vocal.
A lot of coaches are saying, I support my players if they decide to peacefully protest. And so, you know, that's huge. That was not happening last time around. And, you know, coaches didn't want to touch the subject. And so if the player feels like the coach is standing between him and possible backlash from ownership, possible backlash from the league, that player feels supported and knows, first and foremost, he already has his teammates' support. He has a lot, you know, I would say substantial public support. And he also has the support of this head coach who is standing directly in between him and whatever backlash he might receive. And that's job security, and that's huge. And so I think that's different this time around, and I think those things are really important.
All right, Jordan, final question. What are you most looking forward to covering the Los Angeles Rams this upcoming season?
The weather, first and foremost.
Fair.
And
very
I'm really
fair.
Looking forward to all the food. I miss it out there so much. And if anyone's listening and has my Twitter handle, send me all the food recommendations. I'm writing them all down, and I just cannot wait to get out there.
Listen, we got you covered. Don't worry. Plenty of great LA spots. You'll be fine on the food front, okay? Looking forward to your coverage this year for the Rams. Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic. Jordan, thanks for taking the time and joining the show, all right?
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. All right. That's Jordan Rodrigue right there. Covered the Panthers for 4 years. Now she's coming to LA to cover the Los Angeles Rams. We got halftime coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, just a quick reminder. Coming up at 8:30, Andrew Grief of the LA Times. Fellas, what's going on? Curtis, what's going on over there in the studio?
In the studio, not a lot, but traffic's coming back. Got that downtown traffic again coming today. So
traffic's coming back. By the way, is anybody? There's still nobody in the office, right? Like nobody.
Nope.
What's an office?
LA Live. How quiet?
Is Michael Scott there?
The other buildings, anything going on or no?
As far as I know, the only other thing open is Starbucks right next to us, and that's it.
Hotel? Anything?
No. Okay, everything else is the way that you guys left it 3 months ago.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Jess, what's going on? What's going on with you?
I just want to know, is there still advertisement for like that Baby Shark show that should have happened in like March?
Yeah. And JoJo Siwa was the point thing that was supposed
JoJo
to be months
Siwa.
Ago.
That's yeah. So I'm good. The truck already, you know, the truck that usually passes by around there already left and gone. So we will be beepless-ness.
Unless we
is that the right one? Yeah, so unless that. But we're all professionals here. We know how to mute ourselves before. When the mic is on, I make sure I'm on. And I make sure that my dictionary are close to those 7 dirty words.
I'm trying to figure out.
I don't know where this segment's going.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, and I was giving it time. I was saying, you know what? Jess has a direction of where it's going. Get things started, Jess. What do we got?
All right. So fantastic! The most excellent of excellent news today. Bill and Ted Face the Music, a brand new trailer for the third entry of the Bill and Ted franchise, dropped today. Ironically, of all days today, can you guys kind of find any tie with today's date and the release of Bill and Ted Face the Music trailer coming out today?
Just real quick. Why it came out today?
What's today's date?
Today is June 8th, 2020.
No, today's the 9th.
June 9th, 2020. I don't know. Why is it?
So if you put what number is June on the,
right,
you know.
Six. So 6/9/2020.
Nice.
Okay. All right.
Nice. I'll just leave it there.
We're all Anyways. 14 years old again, everybody. We're all 14.
Bill and Ted.
The first, by the way, this is the third one.
What was it?
It was like 90, 19. When was it that they had their first?
The very first one came out in 1989.
Okay, 1989. So right around there, right around
then,
that time.
And then the sequel at 1991.
Okay, all right.
So
you guys excited
to
see
the third
one?
I'm excited to see the film just because that I always love Bill and Ted, and then it's Keanu Reeves. But I kind of want to take a step back from the trailer because they did something pretty cool last week. Okay. You know, the characters Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan, they attended San Dimas High School, and they actually surprised the 2020 class of San Dimas High School with a little message. And so here's Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves congratulating the 2020
That's
class
awesome.
Of San Dimas High School.
Hi, I'm Alex Winter.
Hi, I'm Keanu Reeves.
And together we are
Wild Stallions.
And we know it's a tough time right now and that you're having to do this virtual graduation. We want to wish you the best of luck moving forward.
Yeah, congratulations to the graduating class of 2020. Well done.
San Dimas High School football does rule.
Rules!
But most importantly, we wanted to tell you to be excellent to each other.
And party on.
So that's Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter wishing class of 2020
awesome.
The most
very cool.
excellent graduation. It is cool, and I absolutely love that they did that. However, I felt that it kind of missed just a little bit of that Bill and Ted feel. So I went ahead and added I remixed it for them. So here's my remixed version. So anyone out there who's going to San Diego, you know what? For all of the 2020 graduating class, this one is for you.
Hi, I'm Alex Winter.
Hi, I'm Keanu Reeves.
And together we are...
One Stallion!
And we know it's a tough time right now and that you're having to do this virtual graduation. We want to wish you the best of luck moving forward.
Yeah, they should have done that.
Yeah.
They should have
congratulations to the graduating class of 2020. Well done.
San Dimas High School football does rule.
San Dimas High School football
rules! But most importantly, we wanted to tell you...
the whole thing here?
Excellent to each other. Party on, dudes!
Just added a little bit of spice to
No, that. they should have definitely had some music or something along those lines, or played into you know, obviously the movie coming out. But that is, I do like that. I think that's very, very cool that they're doing that, and they did it for San Dimas High School.
Yes, excellent.
Curtis, what do you got there, bud?
So, saw something on the good old timeline. I thought you guys would be very happy to hear this. Pau Gasol was in the news today. He announced he's planning, if his health and his foot allows him, he wants to come back for one more season. So naturally, the question was asked, how about coming back to the Lakers? And Powell's response is very, very promising. So Powell responded, my intention is to play one final season if my foot allows it. The Lakers being my final season is very attractive.
Okay, so this conversation has come up, I think, a couple different times now, because it sounds like Pau, obviously, if he comes back one more year, he's going to want a chance at an NBA championship, but he's also going to want to be with a team like the Lakers, where we all appreciate and respect Pau Gasol. Here's the only thing. The Lakers, they got to keep this simple with Pau. You got a chance this season to win an NBA championship, you got a chance next season to win an NBA championship. Pau can't be on your roster for a farewell tour. Pau can't be on your roster simply because you want him there for what he's done in the past. It's different for a team that doesn't have a chance to win a chip, that isn't competing. You're doing it more for a PR standpoint. You're doing it more for a fan base that doesn't really have much to cheer about. Lakers are trying to win championships, right? They're going to try and get one this year. They'll have another chance next year. I think these are the two best chances, this year being the most that I think under this LeBron window. I love Pau Gasol. Pau's going to one day have his jersey retired at Staples Center. And so. I can't wait for that standing ovation from Staples when they give him, you know, the respect that he deserves. Anytime he comes to Staples, he'll get that respect. But should he come to the Lakers in his final year simply because he's Pau Gasol? Probably not. You have to, you know, if you brought him because you thought he was a good fit and he could help, great, do it. But if you don't feel that and you're just doing it for a PR standpoint, I don't think I'm too crazy on the idea.
Yeah, I'm in the same kind of boat. It would be great to
I love Pau.
Pau. Who doesn't love Pau? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be great to have him just kind of, you know, as a send-off kind of way. And it would kind of, I feel... not repair, but just, you know, he got so much slack and so much. He was kind of the scapegoat the last couple years he was here, you know, kind of returning. And if he can contribute, even if it's in a small sample size, kind of something like Dwight Howard's kind of doing, and it would be great. And it would be a fantastic story, and I'm all for it. But the problem is right now that backcourt is our strength right now. This is the Lakers' strength. JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis.
The front court.
Mm-hmm. The front court. And mm-hmm. You don't really need a Pau Gasol right now.
And we'll see what happens next year, right? Like next year,
you
never know. But I just go back to this. He's going to be 40 years old. The guy's had health issues, and he's already, you know, a future Hall of Famer and a legend. If you can use him and he helps, great. If you can't, that's okay as well. Okay, I got a question for the both of you. have either of you, and maybe you guys have because you guys are into video games and everything else, but have you ever used those VR headsets? Or do you have do you own a yes. VR headset?
I don't. Well, I own like the one that you can stick your phone in because I needed it for a class when I was in school. But I'm definitely I definitely would love to have either an Oculus Rift or eventually the PS, the PlayStation VR, because those are the two of the better ones. Those are the two to get if you're going to get anything VR.
Okay, Curtis, have you ever used one? Do you own one?
Don't own one because you need some space, and I really don't have that much space for it. But I have used them definitely multiple times in the past, yeah.
Okay, so I go to on Monday I was driving up from San Diego. I got a friend of mine, his family stopped by, quick hello, and he's like, Al, you have to try this. You got it. And he's promoted this a couple times to me. He's like, I have this VR headset. Have you ever tried it? I'm like, no, I never tried it. He's like, Al, you're gonna freaking love it. It's unbelievable. I'm like, all right, but I don't really know what you're talking about. I kind of know what he's talking about, but I've never, you know, put one on. So I go, I stop by his place, and he's like, all right, you got to try this. Throw the bad boy on. Have you guys, and I think it was the Oculus, is that what you said it's called, Jess?
Yeah.
Okay, have you seen, one of them is Jurassic Park. Do you know what I'm talking about or no?
Oh, I mean, there's a bunch of dinosaur ones, but I don't think I've heard of like the Jurassic Park one, but I'm immediately
okay,
interested.
So it's, I think, on like, you know, it's nothing you have to purchase. It's just on there. So it's for those who, let's say, for the first time are trying VR headset. What is this thing all about? You know, all that stuff. So I throw the thing on. He says, okay, click the Jurassic Park. I click on the Jurassic Park. And then I'm just kind of standing there. And, you know, it's a freaking trip. Like you turn your head, you look behind you, you look up, you look down. Okay, everything is there. And you're straight up on this land with dinosaurs, and you know, at first it's just a smaller dinosaur. Eventually the T-Rex comes out, they try to attack the T-Rex. T-Rex is throwing out all this kind of, like, you feel like you're literally in this world. And I know that's exactly what it is. It's a virtual reality world. But then he starts talking to me and he says, okay, try this game. And I'm playing whatever, some kind of BS tennis game, but it was just, you know, try this, you've never tried it before. Then he goes a step further and starts explaining to me. He's like, okay, now you could be sitting in any lobby. You could be sitting, you know, watching Netflix. And the way you watch Netflix on there, if I want to watch The Office or Parks and Rec like we were talking about before, I mean, what an incredible experience. And the only thing that I could think of is, what the hell is this thing going to be like in 5 to 10 years? Like, think about how much better it's going to get, and it's already really, really good. But think about just how much better it's going to get. And then he started mentioning that I guess a lot of these sports games, you'll have the ability, or maybe you already have the ability, to put on your you know, your VR headset. And it's as if the game is going live. So it's a live game that's going on. It could be Lakers versus the Golden State Warriors. But the angle you have is taken from a camera and all these different cameras that are at the game, live at the game, and you're sitting there, and it's as if you're sitting front row. That is an incredible, incredible world that I was unaware of. And what is it, $600, $700? Those things are worth it.
Easy.
That is
they're worth it.
Big. Oh, I wouldn't. Well, for me personally, I wouldn't say that. I think the price range right now for VR is definitely on the higher side to get that kind of experience that you're talking about. You know, like I was saying, I have one where I can slip my phone in, and that's okay. But if you have something like the Oculus, which is a powerful machine, it's the machine
real
you
deal.
Want to get for VR.
That's
the
real
one
deal.
You want to do. And you know what you're talking about? The NBA has 360 games out now. Mark Rogondino, who you know, is a does some stuff for the NBA and does some stuff for LAFC for the station.
But you're saying live games?
Yeah, he actually calls the 360 games for – I don't know if it's on NBA.com or if it's through behind a paywall, but he calls the 360 games. And then in wrestling, in the WWE, they've already experimented with 360 VR – 360 cameras at least. So that's what you
have to – Okay, how is it? How is the experience with wrestling?
It's – different because where the cameras are positioned are on the turnbuckles. So you have a really unique viewing angle that you don't even get when you're there. Like you're on, you can choose any of the four turnbuckles to, you know,
are they good
to
angles
watch
or
from.
No?
They are. They're great angles, but it's just weird because, well, for me, it's weird. I'm not the biggest VR person. I did a whole thing. I took a whole class on VR. I went to the VR Expo a couple years ago. Uh-huh. It was great. It's crazy. The technology is
But the potential.
Insane.
But isn't the potential unreal? I mean, I just kept looking at this thing and I'm like, man, in 5 to 10 years, this thing is going to be so stupid. And I think that experience of, you know, I know we have a TV at home and everything else, but the way you can sit there and that experience of just kind of having any background you want, it looks like you're sitting at a hotel lobby. It's kind of insane. Like it's a really, really cool experience that I just got to imagine the technology is just going to be insane in a couple years.
What's crazy about it is, you know, you said you tried it out the other day and it was so crazy. So that tech's really only been kind of mainstream for like maybe 2 years.
Yeah, it's still relatively
So imagine,
new.
Yeah, when you say 5 years from now, that's like three times as long as it's been around already. And the biggest barrier definitely, though, is the price to get into it. Because not only do you need to get that set, you either need to have a really powerful $1,000 computer to go with it, or a game console that's like $500-$600, you know what I mean?
Yeah, to be able to process, because, you know, think about this. You know, nowadays,
so are people using it now that don't get that? Are they just using it for TV? Because
no,
you can go Netflix, there you go YouTube, you
not
go all
yet,
your...
No, primarily
yeah, no,
it's gaming
we're not
right
there
now.
Yet.
Because
yeah,
usually those people
right now.
Have those expensive computers already for their games, so it works out.
But don't... Go for it, Curtis.
There was... I want to say a couple months ago, before all this happened, and it actually would make a lot more sense now, there was, I believe, Lindsey Stirling, the one that does the violin player. She has,
yeah, Lindsey Stirling.
She did
She's
a whole
a
VR
musician.
Concert.
Hmm.
And
oh,
you
yeah,
were, like, on the
that.
Stage right next to her. So, you know, it's only going to get more and more ridiculous. Because right now, you're also kind of, there's a lot of cables and it's clunky. But, you know, Jess and I are always talking about the next PlayStation. The next one's supposed to be wireless everywhere, which makes it even more portable and easy to use. And it's only going to get more and more crazy as we go.
Yeah, right now, you know, the VR is still experimenting with, like, movies and TV shows. They definitely have a sports aspect to it, or, like, documentary sense. There's an app that I use. It's a free app. They have a bunch of stuff. I got to see if I can find it. But, you know, I've watched, like, you know, Lindsey Stirling had a at a 360 concert, basically, in the when I took that VR class, I had to download that app that had a bunch of different features, and one of them was, you know, a Paul McCartney concert, where you can choose, you just move your head to a certain point, and you leave it there, and you'll kind of just zoom there. But it's still a kind of working title, because when it comes to 360, that's another thing too. See, I can get way deep into it. 360 and VR are two completely different things too, and that's something that I think a lot of people kind of mismatch together. VR is virtual reality, so that's, you know, putting on the headset and what you did going to Jurassic Park.
That experience was freaking ridiculous. It was awesome.
Slee was in.
I'm in. You know, whatever the hell that was, I was. I'm in. I walked away.
You want to see the next level stuff though? You got to go to the Void at Downtown Disney. I haven't been there, but I've heard a bunch of great things. It's Star Wars centric, but it's essentially a VR game. But not only do you have your headset, you have this body pack. So, you know, stormtroopers are shooting at you. If you get hit, it sends like a vibration to the body pack, so you feel like you got shot with a blaster.
Yeah, that's next level.
That's next level. I want to try that.
That is definitely next level. I got a quick question for you guys. Do either of you play golf or no?
I play golf with friends. I play mini golf. Does that count?
Doesn't really count, but I respect the mini golf. Curtis, any golf for you?
No, none whatsoever.
All right. So, quick story. This morning, decided a couple days ago I was going to golf with a buddy of mine.
Look at you.
Used to work with at the station, and there's a golf course here near where I live. It's a municipal course, Roosevelt. And so we decide, okay, you know what? Let's go play. It's quick. 9 holes. They're all par 3, so you're probably done in an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's a perfect course just to, you know, get in for a few hours. Get the golf gear, get ready, throw everything in the trunk, get down there 7:30 in the morning. My buddy Nate comes as well, and there we are down at Roosevelt Golf Course. We start walking up, and I'm like, damn, there's kind of a lot of people here. There's never people here. Not that there's never people here, but a municipal course, it's usually spread out. Okay, all good. Get up there. Yeah, do you guys have a reservation? Yeah, you guys have never done reservations. So, no, of course we don't have a reservation.
Oh.
Yep, we just started doing reservations. So looks like our next slot's in about 2.5 hours. Put the golf clubs right back in the back of the trunk. Start driving back and call it a day. Let's just say no golf today. No golf this morning, fellas. All that and no golf.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
I would have been excited had I gone and, you know, packed for golf and gone to the
I just wanted to be outside.
Already.
I just wanted to be outside. Like, it's nice to just kind of be out there. And I haven't golfed in a while, so it'd been good to get those games in. So for those who are trying to play Roosevelt in Los Feliz, I highly, highly encourage you to set up a reservation.
So you need you need a mulligan on that trip, you're saying?
Need a mulligan, bud. Need a mulligan. Jess, what else you got?
We can play a little game right now. Last week, okay. Forbes released their world's highest paid celebrities, right? And out of that group, there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 athletes, 1 former athlete. And including those athletes is Cristiano Ronaldo. He is the
Cristiano Ronaldo.
There you go. He becomes the first billion-dollar soccer player to earn over $1 billion in his playing career. He made in 2019 just over $105 million, slotting him at number 4 on this Forbes top 100 list. So let's see if you guys can name the other 9 people on this list. As I mentioned, it is four other people are in sports.
I'll four other sports athletes on the list?
Yeah. What? 2 more soccer athletes, 1 tennis athlete, and 1 basketball athlete.
Well, I already saw – I will say that I read the Roger Federer part. So I know Roger Federer is the highest paid athlete in the world.
Yep. At 100.
And that just shows you – by the way, think about that. What an OG Roger Federer is. I mean, just the freaking man Roger Federer is. 106.3 million. I could probably guess the other 2 soccer players. Curtis, what do you think? What's the other? Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously one of them. I think the other one's going to be obvious as well.
I mean, you got to say Messi, right?
Yep, right
Messi,
behind Orlando.
Messi's got to be on that list. And I'm
104.
I'm assuming Neymar's on that list as well.
Neymar, number 7, 95.5. And the last one should be pretty obvious too.
From a basketball player?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, LeBron, right?
Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo.
How'd you guys know? I did not think you guys were going to guess Mel. Just kidding. It's LeBron.
Okay, who else is on that list?
So, number 10, the former athlete, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
He's the man.
87.5. Yeah, definitely. Number 8, which is, I thought this was surprising. Oh, LeBron James is number 9 at 88.2. At number 8, Howard Stern with $90 million. Well, I'm still surprised that he's still – he's in the top 10.
Raking. He is like, raking it in.
I just didn't think he was that much.
But, you know, on radio, still the biggest name on radio.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? 100%. Like, still the biggest name. Okay, who do you got? So, 7.
So, 7 is Neymar.
Okay.
At 95.5. And number 6, Tyler Perry.
Damn.
97. Yeah.
Tyler Perry is number 6.
Dude number does have a movie coming 6. Out every year, though.
And you know what? He just keeps
dragging. They all make money.
Huh? Yeah.
Okay, who's 5?
5, Messi. 4, Ronaldo. 3, Federer. And then the last 2. 1 is a celebrity. That's all she really is. It's not even an actress. She's an influencer and celebrity. And number 2 is a musician. Can you guys guess which either one is?
I'll go Kim Kardashian.
Close. Kylie Jenner and Kanye West.
That's 1-2.
1-2. Kylie Jesus Jenner, Lord. 590 million. Kanye West, 170.
Oh my gosh.
Did you notice that gap?
170?
I don't know how.
No, actually, I didn't notice that gap. I didn't even pay attention to it. Damn.
That's over.
That shows
like
you
about,
I know.
400?
300 million right there. 300 million plus.
Insane. No,
$400 million. Yeah, it is. I did not know that those two are making. By the way, it just shows you how out of touch I am with all this stuff. I mean, the sports figures, I got it, but I didn't think Tyler Perry. I guess that one, The Rock doesn't surprise me. Top 10, but Kanye at number 2. Damn.
I know.
Well, he's doing something. Who would
have thought? Where's Sleestacks on this list?
He's probably in the top 11,000.
He's $6.3 billion. Okay, that's all we got, fellas. We got to get Andrew Grief in here. Andrew Grief, LA Times. Some questions around the bubble in Orlando. So we'll do that coming up next. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. Stay right here. This is the Sleeve Show on 710 ESPN.
Oh, my man, the Sleeve Stack.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
I want to welcome in Andrew Grief from the LA Times. Still a lot of questions around the bubble in Orlando, but obviously the NBA is going to push forward and try and make it happen. Some good positive news these last couple of days from a sports perspective. Andrew, thanks for joining the show, bud. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course. So I just want to ask, you know, we'll kind of get things started. Your article in the LA Times, it's a great read. What are some of the main questions that still remain that, you know, obviously we know what the NBA, what their plan is. They're picking Orlando. That's going to be the spot that they create this bubble. What are some of the questions that are still out there?
There are so many. I think that one of the things that came out of my reporting, and Dan Wojcicki, my coworker who co-wrote the story with me, like, you know, essentially – the Board of Governors, you know, they ratified that they would play, you know, 22 teams in Orlando, and then the Players Association approved that as well. But that's really all that was decided last week. Over the weekend, you know, you're asking people, so what, you know, what else is there? What's been decided? And everyone would just kind of come back and say, I mean, there's so much more to be negotiated, whether that's when families could join, you know, exactly what the accommodations would be. No one's really sure about the medical plan in terms of, you know, does Disney World even have an MRI machine there? What would happen if someone had to leave? So there is so much that has yet to be negotiated between the players and the league. That said, there's nothing that anyone felt like was actually going to hold this thing up from happening.
Sure.
The players union and the league, they work too well together, but there are a lot of unanswered questions.
So Andrew, is it, how does that play out now? Is this, do some of those questions get answered over the next couple of weeks? Is there a timetable they want to make sure they get all this done by?
Well, in about a month, teams will be supposedly arriving in Orlando. That's kind of the target. The teams would probably arrive, but maybe the end of the first week of July, after about a week together training in their home markets. So these have to be answered really quickly. I think that, you know, probably this week, maybe the next 10 days or so, you're going to see pretty much everything fall in place, because you just, the logistics involved with moving 22 teams to Orlando, things have to move really quickly. Again, no one at all thought that there was going to be a holdup, you know, that there was going to be posturing, you know, for leverage that was going to possibly delay this. But, you know, I think that coming out of the weekend, players, executives, agents, coaches, everyone was kind of wondering, okay, we know we'll be here, but does anyone know what life is going to be like inside the bubble? Not really.
Yeah, I think that's it is, you know, I feel like this is the position that everybody's in, right? Whether you're a sports franchise, a sports league, you're a company, right? A lot of these companies are starting to open up. A lot of corporations still, I mean, I just use us as an example. I've been doing the show from my living room now, or from my, you know, apartment here for the past, I think, 3 months now. It's 3 months total. I don't think anybody really knows what to expect. And I think for the NBA, I have to imagine there's going to be a lot of trial and error as well, where they have a game plan, they have a blueprint, but they're going to have to work on the fly just strictly based upon never being in this position before.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's something that was actually echoed quite a bit, was, you know, at some point the NBA is probably going to put out probably some sort of manual or some sort of playbook, you know, literally writing out kind of here's what will happen for plan A, for plan B if something happens, et cetera, et cetera. But because we don't quite know how coronavirus will affect the, you know, the bubble, it can't be impenetrable. That's what one former team doctor said. There's just no way you can keep it securely closed because workers will come and go. It's, you're going to have to do, be flexible and compromising and finding things, you know, solutions on the fly. Again, I think most of the concerns are just exactly the medical protocols. Even something I thought was really interesting was the discussion of, are they going to have to pool some medical services, like centralize, some of it? Because if you're going to try to keep team rosters, team travel parties to about 35 people, that's really slim. You know, some of these teams travel with 45 or 50 people on a road trip. So that's a considerable cut. And you can't bring all your masseuses, all your dentists, your consultants, your ophthalmologists, and team doctors. Remember, these doctors work primarily as, you know, at their own private practice in their home market.
Right.
So can they really afford to leave their practice for 3 months? Again, the team doctor, a former team doctor I talked with, the Dallas Mavericks, he just felt like it's going to be an enormous economic hit. So it's going to be something that teams are going to have to navigate.
So just use that as an example. Let's say hypothetically, you think there'll be doctors there that aren't there just for a specific team. Will there be doctors that handle multiple teams, multiple players?
It seemed like that was a safe assumption that they would probably have, you know, among the pooled medical people, it seems like people expect that there will be infectious disease personnel, like specific to coronavirus, like maybe an Orlando-based group of doctors who would be there strictly for coronavirus. And then to alleviate kind of every team, again, having to bring a lot of these specialists like a dentist or whatnot, they might have someone, a team of those folks, also Orlando-based, who maybe come and go. You know, some of the services you might not need as much. But in terms of doctors, whether that's an internist or an orthopedist, there's a thought, well, maybe if they can't come the whole time, maybe they show up for the playoffs, if the team is in the playoffs, or if a team is, maybe isn't expecting to go for the whole time. Well, maybe your doctor shows up with you at the start and then stays with you until your 8 games are over. It's probably going to vary team by team, but this is just like a small subsection of all these questions people have.
Yeah, I think the beauty is, okay, we see some light at the end of the tunnel. We see some opportunity for, obviously, the NBA to try and complete its season. How much do you think, when you look at the answers that we do have, I guess you could say, from a basketball perspective, how do you like the amount of time that the NBA, the league, is giving for its players to have that training camp, then eventually end up in Orlando, play some exhibition games, play 8 regular season games, and then get to the postseason? Do you think they did as good of a job as they could with the structure of this whole thing?
From a player health perspective, I do think so. I remember back in April, I wrote a story kind of looking at some of the medical questions, and at that point, a lot of people were just talking about and wondering about if the NBA does restart, well, how quick do you allow players to kind of get up to speed? Because you know, a team athletic trainer I spoke with was really concerned about the possibility, not even necessarily of coronavirus, but, you know, Achilles tendons and knees and joints and just overuse injuries that maybe you haven't been training at a basketball level for 3 months. Now all of a sudden you're going full bore. There was a lot of concern about what would happen. So I think if teams are showing up to start training again about June 30th in full, and then they're not playing for another month, I think that's a pretty good amount of time. People were hoping for 3 weeks to 4 weeks back in April, and this is essentially what they're going to be getting.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Agree from the LA Times joining the Sliwa Show. Good article right now. Some questions around the bubble in Orlando. So he helps not just there's going to continue to be questions, but highlight what some of those questions are. Want to, Andrew, just to get your thoughts on this, the Atlanta Hawks general manager talked a little bit about how next season the NBA would look to condense some of the games, right? Condense the season, still play the same amount of games, but they're trying to catch up a little bit. They're already going to be so out of whack now just because of the way the schedule is. How much do you think the NBA I guess the best way to put it is I'll use the Lakers and Clippers as an example from a local perspective. Can you imagine Lakers and Clippers starting off next year and having games, you know, a ton more back-to-backs and trying to cram 82 games into a much smaller schedule? Don't you think we're going to run into this, and maybe this is something that we'll just worry about later? We should just be appreciative that they're trying to finish out this season. But don't you think it's going to hinder some teams? It's going to kind of work against them. And also that conversation about load management that we've had in the past, I'm sure that would be most certainly in play in a season set up that way.
Yeah, that's the point I was, when you mentioned that, that was kind of my first thought was, if we're kind of already seeing more and more players kind of rest, sit out games, whether that's just for rest, whether that's for injury management, I think you're probably bound to see more of that, right? If you're playing more four games in five nights or more back-to-backs, which is what would have to happen if you're going to condense the schedule. So I think obviously the league would have to be prepared for that. I'm sure it would be no surprise to them, of course, that would likely be, you see an uptick in that. So, you know, it won't leave everyone happy if that happens. At the same time, because we've just gone through so many months without sports, I kind of wonder if fans would be as kind of intense about load management or not seeing their favorite players play as often, just because now that we've kind of had a taste of what it was like just not having sports and being unsure whether we'd get them back at all. I wonder if that would, that kind of goodwill would kind of linger, and fans would kind of say, hey, whatever, we're just glad sports are back at this point, or people would still be, pretty upset about it. I would probably think that fans would be a little more lenient just because they know that, you know, a condensed schedule is not going to be conducive to peak performance for a lot of these guys.
What do you think, Andrew, when the conversation comes up about the season, it could play out this way. It could end up being, I think, unfair. Let's just use that as the right word. What I mean by that is somebody can test positive for COVID and a team, it could be a major player, and that team all of a sudden now is out of contention simply because they're missing their star. How do you think people are going to end up perceiving this season? I know it's not going to be perfect no matter what the league did, and I think everybody's thrilled that the season, we're going to try and, you know, finish off what we started. But how do you think people will ultimately perceive the champion, will perceive whoever ends up on top in the league?
I think the idea of the asterisk is something that is probably bound to be stuck to the season no matter what, because it is going to be so different and remembered for being so different. I mean, think about the amount of books and 30 for 30s we'll probably get on this season. You know, it's bound to be remembered as so different and hopefully a one-off. No one wants this to happen again, of course, under these circumstances. So I think you're going to get some level of this was very different no matter what happens, even in a best-case scenario. But I guess I would not personally devalue whoever emerges as a champion just because it feels like an endurance test. You know, it feels like these are, like, if you can get to the finish line, if the whole league can get to the finish line, you know, if there isn't a large amount of positive tests for COVID that knock maybe the entire series off. And that was one of the questions people had was, would the league have some sort of threshold? You know, if X number of players on a certain team all test positive for COVID, would that force the series to be altered? Again, no one really knows what the contingency plan would be like. But if they can get to the finish line, I feel like you have to applaud the winner almost more, just because it could be a really strange set of circumstances. I mean, there's going to be cabin fever by the end of it. These players will be on that Disney campus for almost 3 months. So I think that it has to be remembered almost as like not so much even like a playoff test, but almost like a marathon. You know, you just have to get to the finish line. I would not devalue it, but I know that there has to be, of course, some level of looking at this askew just because it's so different than what any NBA season has ever had to deal with.
Andrew Grief, who covers the NBA for the LA Times, joined in the Sliwa show. Andrew, it's interesting because, you know, we've played out, okay, what teams can come back and really make some noise. And we know the Lakers, Clippers, and the Bucks, those are going to be the three favorites that are probably going to have the greatest likelihood of winning an NBA championship this year. We'll see how it plays out. One of the questions I think is funny that's dominated a lot of the noise is, okay, well, what are these experiences actually going to be like without fans? And you heard some rumblings that they might use some of this, you know, NBA 2K sound, like that type of environment, that type of style. I'm under the, I like the idea of, at least for now, right? I mean, I might watch a couple games and be like, okay, this is a really boring experience unless you do add crowd noise or so forth. But I think there would be an authenticity to just playing the games raw as they are, letting us hear the players, letting us hear the coaches. I think that's unique in itself. They should embrace it. Where are you on that? Are you a fan of them, you know, putting in the sound and making sure that we hear fans, or would you rather have it a little bit more raw?
I think that it would be, as a viewer, I think it'd be more interesting to have it be no sound, no artificial sound, and just hearing the players and the coaches
I'm with
and
you.
Interactions. Mm-hmm. But I forget what season it was. Maybe it was 2015 or 2014 or 15, but there was a game in Madison Square Garden. It was the Warriors and the Knicks, and the Knicks didn't have any music during gameplay. It was kind of a little experiment, like it was back in the day, I guess. And the players hated it. Like, they universally hated it. I think even the coaches were like, this was so odd. So I think if there's not some sort of noise, even for the players on the site, I think it's going to be
awkward.
A very odd experience. And yeah, a very awkward experience. So I think the players would probably want some sort of noise. I mean, who really cares if it's artificial? As long as there's something there, I think that they would probably want that just based off the experience a few years ago. You know, one thing I was talking to someone today about was they mentioned that, you know, there are players who play better in like a scrimmage setting or like a practice setting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who can kind of tighten up because the nerves may be in a big spot, in a boisterous arena. And I had not thought about that before, but I kind of wonder about that. Like, is there an instance where, you know, because there's no one in the stands, not as intimidating an atmosphere, like, could that give some guys a better chance of playing better? It's just one of these wrinkles that we don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's fascinating. The more you peel back, it's going to be obviously unprecedented, and I think you'll probably see players acclimate to it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But just mm-hmm. those first maybe four or five games, I'd be fascinated to get really candid responses from players about what is this like.
Andrew Grieve from the LA Times, good article right now. Some of the questions that still arise on the bubble in Orlando. Andrew, appreciate it, buddy. Appreciate your insight. Thank you for taking some time, and it's great to have you on the show, all right?
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Andrew Grieve right there. Final thoughts coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, with your first and last name, city, and occupation. Or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, or Shooteria.com. So we appreciate the partners. We obviously appreciate trying to highlight a frontline worker as well. Okay, so just to play off of what Andrew Grieve was mentioning, and I know I played a few different clips of Kyle Kuzma, who was on with the Undefeated on Instagram Live. Here's Kuzma giving his thoughts on if he has any concerns about being in this so-called bubble.
Oh, not necessarily. You know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, for people to, you know, get over this virus, you know, we have to, you know, become immune to it. You know, it's one thing to social distance and not be around anyone, but, you know, literally a lot of people know, like, that makes your immune system weaker by not being around things. So obviously being around things will, you know, hopefully make it a little bit easier not to, you know, catch and, you know, have these serious issues that a lot of Americans are really suffering with.
That's Kyle Kuzma right there. So, I know there's still a ton of questions left. I think sometimes I read, you know, these articles that are out there, and I do it just because I want to make sure I'm educated for the show and ready to answer any questions that are there. But at the same time, I think I almost don't want to get into too much of the details. I know the NBA is doing their work. I know for us and from a fan base perspective, a lot of people are excited. Just think about LA. Think about LA, how excited they are. And I said this to start the show. What if 60 days from now, Major League Baseball, the Dodgers are playing, the Lakers are in the playoffs, and you just have these, you know, 3-4 months of just unbelievable sports, then followed by the NFL. We all hope we're in that position because that means, you know, there isn't a second wave or COVID-19 is – there's enough tests being out there and they're proven to be reliable that we can complete these seasons and we could start other seasons and then maybe potentially have fans back in games. So we'll see if that eventually becomes the case. Tweet a little bit earlier today, Adam Schefter of ESPN. USC is expected to end Reggie Bush's disassociation from the school, sources tell ESPN. So how about that? This is something that I feel, you know, most people out here in Southern California feel the same way. This was part of a huge that sanctions that USC was under is a 2-year postseason ban. 14 vacated victories, including the 2004 BCS National Championship and the loss of 30 scholarships. That began back in June 10th of 2010. And this was, you know, disciplinary action to USC back when Reggie Bush won the Heisman Trophy back in 2005. So long story short, it's good news that after 10 years, former USC Trojans running back Reggie Bush's disassociation from the university is expected to soon come to an end. So I always thought, you know, when that all went down, it's like, I think hypocrites is the right word. Is that the right way of putting it? NCAA, they're okay to make billions of dollars off these student athletes. And I'm not saying that, you know, Reggie Bush, if he bought his parents a house and he did it through somebody that was going to be an agent. Of course, that's not, you know, what should be done in college. But what should happen is when Reggie Bush was absolutely dominating college football and selling out the Coliseum and was by far one of the most watched athletes and, you know, putting a lot of money in a lot of people's pockets, I hope and I can't wait for the day that NCAA stops this opportunity for students who are worth so much more than just, you know, that school's name on their back that they actually get the credit for it. But put all that to the side, Reggie Bush should be getting credit at USC and everything that he accomplished there. So looks like that's finally going to come to an end. Tomorrow, Sliwa Show starting at 6:30, Crosstalk at 6 o'clock. Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ will get things going at 6 a.m. in the morning. They'll go 6 to 10. Thank you to Jesse. Thank you to Curtis. LA, as always, greatly appreciate you guys tuning into the show. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great rest of your night.